listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos, Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents All Nations, One Blood, the sermon by the Reverend Rick Skidmore, presented on Sunday, March 8th, 2015.
So we're midway through our journey through the season of Lent, a time of reflection and spiritual stock-taking patterned after Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness. The wilderness is really kind of the signature metaphor for the journey of faith. The wilderness teaches us that faith in God has both a center and an edge to it, and that each is really necessary for the soul's growth and development. Although I think a case could be made that one of the reasons that the church has all but vanished or disappeared, become so anemic in our time, is because we have lavished maybe too much attention on the center and not enough time on the edge. The center may well be the place where stories are collected and where faith is preserved and kept, but the edge is the place where most of those stories happened. The historical drama of biblical faith begins on the edge with this story about Abraham and Sarah leaving their ancestral land and in search of a new home. The place that Abraham and his family left was probably what is known today as the southern part of Iraq, an area that was once prolific with archaeological digs, but is now no more, has been bombed into oblivion over the past 20 years. Our biblical ancestors were heavy borrowers. And most of the early stories that you find in Genesis were really versions of popular legends and myths that were shared by a number of different tribes and peoples living in the ancient Middle East. Islam and Judaism share much of that same heritage. I know most of you know that. But Abraham is really the grandfather to the three great monotheistic traditions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And the Quran, the sacred book of Islam, contains many stories in it about the same prophets that show up in the Hebrew scriptures. And did you know that the Quran also has stories about Jesus in it? Jesus, who was called, who is known in the Quran as the Word of God. I tell you this because I think it's important to shatter any illusion that we might hold that, you know, we're the only ones that God speaks to, that we're the only ones that God has contacted, that we're the only ones who have received God's message, the only ones God cares about. But you look at the long history of different religions, all of them attempting to discredit the others. You look at the thousand sects all claiming to be the one true revelation of the Most High and Holy God. You look at the extent of our ignorance about other people and other faith traditions, and you have to wonder, you know, why all this separation? Why all this distrust? Why this tendency toward isolation and this willful avoidance between people who see each other as different? I mean, this can't be what God intends. And yet, historically, any attempt to bridge that isolation and ignorance is usually seen as heretical, as dangerous, as threatening to the strength and vitality of our own particular peculiar outlook and tradition. Right out of the gate in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus' first public act is met with outrage. His hometown congregation tries to throw him off a cliff because he proclaims in the synagogue, in their hearing, that God doesn't exclusively belong to them. Jesus is heretic. In Christianity, you know, much of this mindset really began to take hold in the third century during the time of Emperor Constantine, when Christianity became then the official religion of the empire. The term was Christian Imperium, and the bishops and the leaders got together and began to identify their faith as imperial above all the other religions and religious expressions in the world. Imperial, which is a loaded word. I mean, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, imperial means ruling, commanding, supreme, majestic. Not bad so far. How about this? Domineering, overbearing, arrogant, triumphant. These are not exactly the qualities that would promote the free flow of ideas and information. And I don't mean to pick on Christianity, but it's really the tradition that I know best. The church is not an empire. The church exists only to serve God and the planet. And if we can't keep that straight, then we really shouldn't be wasting our time or anybody else's. And certainly Christianity isn't alone in its insistent on being the only true path to God. I mean, central to Judaism is this concept of chosenness, God's chosen people. Buddhists and Hindus, although a little more tolerant, but nevertheless, they really describe Western religions as being locked into this dead past. So we're so material-minded as to be unaware of any opportunities for enlightenment. What is it? What is it in the human character that so wants to stand apart? You know, we're alone in our neighborhoods, in our communities, sometimes even in our own families. We're strangers to each other. We avoid any experience with anyone or anything which appears to us to be foreign or strange or dissimilar. And to justify our actions, we often put on this air of superiority. You know, we look at different ethnic groups and different factions with contempt or with pity or with indifference. I think there's a whole host of reasons for this universal intolerance. Historically, you know, human communities have thrived through dominating others, through domination, and the capacity to destroy or to neutralize the opposition. Culturally, we've been taught to fear and to distrust people whose customs and whose habits are different from our own. Psychologically, it's really easy to justify our self-centered drive for comfort and security and power by believing that we're the only ones who've been given that true picture of God. If I have an exclusive hold on reality, then I can negotiate, you see, from a position of strength. If God loves me more than he loves you, then God will win my battles for me and will make my country strong and victorious, and will bless me and my friends and destroy my enemies. And I would add one other reason for our global estrangement. You know, we live apart, I think, because it takes such enormous energy and understanding and change in ourselves to bring us together. You know, if we stress our differences, our conflicts, our wounds, our particularities, then we can justify living in isolation. I mean, think for a moment how hard it is to put a friendship back together, you know, once there's been conflict or separation or disappointment. inertia is such a powerful force in people's lives because it offers us this easy comfort and security and peace. But truly, you know, it is the peace of the walking dead. That day that Jesus entered the temple and drove out the money changers, so what exactly was he objecting to? These money changers exchanged foreign and local currency, which everybody used, for special temple coinage called shekels. These were the only things that you could use to buy a sacrifice or to pay dues. And so an exchange rate was attached, was charged, which put a burden on everybody, especially the poor. So this is kind of a primitive form of playing the lottery when you think about it, the same kind of easy extortion. You're promised a shot at salvation under the pretense that the money collected would go toward rebuilding the infrastructure of the temple. But in truth, most of the money was pocketed, you know, by state-licensed vendors, and the poor suffered the most, as the poor always suffer the most. So Jesus, through this act, is engaged here in this deliberate act of protest against a system that actually benefited by creating barriers and practices and customs that kept people apart. The belief that exclusion and separation are ultimately untrue and unimportant and contrary is not only the central message of Jesus, but it also rings true in the teachings of every compassionate religion, every cry of the Spirit. I am certain that Christianity at its best, and Judaism at its best, and Islam at its best, are all one and the same. The law of love recognizes no soul as alien, or stranger, or foreign, or enemy. A God of love banishes no one, rejects no one, condemns no one. And we may like to play, you know, King of the Mountain, and think of ourselves as the only one that God cares about, but I hope and pray that one day we will all of us be forgiven such arrogance and delusion and come to know that God's blessing is intended for every living being. And you find this in every tradition, every saint, in the sacred literature of every tradition. The New Testament tells us that the person who does not love their brother or their sister, even their enemies, lives in darkness and cannot even see the realm of God. Confucius says that, quote, "You will come to ruin if you do not see all others as equal." Islam claims, quote, "That humanity is but one people." And in Shinto shrines, as well as in Native American custom, you hear that, you know, often that we should regard heaven as our father and the earth as our mother and all souls and living things as our brothers and sisters. The more I experience God's grace in my own life, the more clearly I can see God's grace in others, in loved ones and in friends and even in strangers. I don't pretend to know very much about eternal salvation, but I'm convinced that if there's to be any salvation in this life, if we're to come to know anything about love and forgiveness and unity, then we need to draw closer to each other. We need to look in the eye of an Arab or Iraqi or Jew or Palestinian and see always, you know, a kindred soul. We need to look at the poor and the rich and the initiated and the disenfranchised, the fundamentalist, the orthodox, the atheist, and see a heart and a soul like our own. We need to see through all of the particularities and the customs and the barriers and the conflicts to see that we are one people and there is one God. And in this testimony, we discover that love is not exclusive, cannot be contained in any one expression or tradition. We will have stumbled into the experience that, in truth, we are not alone, not set apart, not estranged to God or to each other. I think if we're to survive individually or as a church community, as a planet, we need to do this heretical and revolutionary work. And let me suggest that the place to begin is right here, as a community of faith. That Sunday in and Sunday out, you know, we raise our voice in song and praise to God. May we look around and see brothers and sisters. May we know that our differences don't need to keep us separate or apart. May we sense the harmony, the blessing that sustains each and every life. And if we can learn this, I believe that we will, like Sarah and Abraham before us, inhabit a brand new space. We will obtain passage to God's promised realm. We will find compassion. And finally, I think we will find our way into the very heart of God.
Listen, listen, listen.